All of us are here for the same reason, which is to promote liberty. And it's very interesting. One of the last questions that was asked to Mark was about how that is done in this country. And unfortunately, the fact that think tanks in particular are extremely funded by the government. There's a lot less private money in Canada than there is in the United States, for example. And so when I was asked to speak here, that is one of the main reasons that I've been writing this book with Adam DeFella, who formerly is of the National Post. The book is called Rescuing Canada's Right, and it deals with institutions and ways of promoting liberty, freedom, small-c conservative, libertarian ideas, whatever you want to call them, basically challenging the notion that statism is okay, because that is the status quo in Canada. The status quo here is not liberal, big L, small L. It's really statist. So what I'm going to do today is talk to you about different experiences in America, how, for example, they built up what we call a small-c conservative or liberty-oriented infrastructure, how what we've done in Canada, which is pretty much the opposite, actually. We've built up an infrastructure of think tanks and organizations that promote quite the opposite point of view, and what you can do, because all of you are here to be activists. I assume that's what you want to take away from this this meeting. So I'd like to give you some ideas of how you can translate what you've learned here this weekend into practical applications that you can take back to your community, your campus, and spread the message of liberty and try and counter these sort of the statist notions that we've had entrenched in this country. Now, the reason that we're going to talk about these sort of other actors in the political spectrum is because politicians in this country do not get it. Politicians all buy into the same status quo, and political parties are not going to move the freedom agenda forward. So the only way to do it is from the outside. It's through activism, and the fact that people are really disenchanted with the political process is actually a plus in a weird way. It means that they're more likely to go out and be active in community organizations, go to meetings like this, get involved with the NCC, I see Jerry Nichols in the back, promoting freedom, or the Fraser Institute, which does a fabulous job, or the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, which fights for lower taxes and less waste in government. And I won't talk to you about that because I could go on forever about how much money is wasted in government. So we don't have a specific figure. We never quantified that. But to look at how the Americans have done it is really instructive, because they started working on this conservative infrastructure, as they call it. Mm-hmm. Now I'll use that word, the small c, back in the 1960s. And after the presidential nomination for Barry Goldwater, there were a group called the Young Americans Foundation, or Young Americans for Freedom. They're now called the Young Americans Foundation. They really took the reins in terms of youth activism in particular and started agitating for change. There's a memorandum that was written in 1971, because I think a number of people were getting concerned not only in the youth side but also in the business community about the situation in the States. The Vietnam War was happening. There was a lot of hippie protests, a lot of counterculture, and the business community was very concerned that the very fundamental elements of capitalism were under attack. So in 1971, the future Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell wrote what's called the Powell Memorandum. Has anyone heard of this here? Okay. Powell Memorandum is what was called the Confidential Memorandum, Attack of the American Free Enterprise System. And what Powell said was that the American economic system is under broad attack. We are not dealing with sporadic or isolated attacks from a relatively few extremists or even from minority socialist cadre. The most disquieting voices in this chorus of criticism come from the most respectable elements of society, the college campus, the pulpit, the media, the intellectual and literary journals, the arts and sciences, and from politicians. Does this sound familiar? Right. Well, we're dealing with that today in Canada. In the States, of course, they're always ahead of the curve. I guess they recognized that 30 years ago. And this memorandum was distributed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to all its members in the States. And the response to this was dramatic. You had foundations that were started. The Mellon Scaife family gave money to start what was now become the Heritage Foundation. The Olin family established a trust to found other organizations. You have the Joseph Coors family that and the Koch family, the Linenhead, the Harry Bradley Foundation, who established awards that we have now for liberty in the United States, for people who promote liberty. All this money, in fact, the money that was quantified that has been for this is in the 1990s, $1 billion was spent in the United States to build out these institutions. So today, what we see is it looks like when you look south of the border that you have Fox News, you have pundits like Ann Coulter, you have you know, magazines, whether it's you know, the Spectator or National Review, Weekly Standard. You've got so much infrastructure there that people can look to and say, well, you know, there's a conservative culture. There's this libertarian, free market, liberty-promoting culture in the United States. But this didn't happen overnight. Over these few decades, all this money was invested in building up organizations, in building up campus newspapers, for example, fighting political correctness on campus in the 1980s. And essentially, I mean, the really, like the Heritage Foundation in particular, played a very critical role even during the Reagan presidency by providing staff for the White House. The Bush presidency did the same. They poached people from all the think tanks. John Bolton was with the American Enterprise Institute before he went to the White House. A number of other people were as well. So by building up this strong network of extra-party institutions, American Republicans were able to push their agenda outside the party and force the party to respond to them. So they feed off each other. And unfortunately, in Canada, we've done the exact opposite. And this goes to what Mark was saying about government funding of think tanks. I was actually unaware of the RIM think tank, Mark. Thank you. I'll be putting that in the book for sure, because the story in Canada is completely different. In the 1960s, Canada wasn't facing the same type of issue with the Vietnam War, obviously, that America was. But it was facing a different problem at home, which was separatism in Quebec. And the separatist fact obviously made people incredibly nervous. This is even before the FLQ started throwing bombs into mailboxes, but in the 1960s, the Quiet Revolution started, and it was felt in Ottawa that something had to be done about this and to counter this fact. And so the government's response was, let's throw money at the problem. Unfortunately, they threw public money at the problem, and they started all sorts of think tanks, research councils, science council, National Council of Welfare, Economic Council, Reform Commission, Law Reform Commission of Canada. They also started funding through the Secretary of State and Citizenship with millions of dollars in public money, all sorts of interest groups, whether it's feminist groups, Native groups, gay, lesbian groups, just anyone who came and had a cause or was a special interest could get money from the government to essentially take the onus off or sort of fracture this French-English axis that Pierre Trudeau in particular saw as a problem. He wanted to make Canada a multicultural, bilingual country and use the public money to do it by funding a whole host of infrastructure of extra party actors. So the result of this is that in Canada, there never developed on the right any kind of infrastructure because there were think tanks that had already been seeded with government money. Somebody brought up the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, which challenged the Fraser Institute's Tax Freedom Day so viciously in a report recently. And they got, it was I think $427,000 between in 2003-2004. They got another $400,000 from the British Columbia government. You know, Fraser doesn't take any money, but the government is funding the ideological opponents to the teeth. So when you look at this, and you look at the Trudeau endowment that's been established as well, that's another one. The government gave $125 million in 2002 to the Trudeau endowment to push Trudeau's notion of a just society, which is essentially a leveling society, equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. Let's make everybody the same through government intervention, redistribution of your tax dollars, whatever. It's really frightening to see how strong the opposition is in this country. And in researching this book, this is what I've learned, and it's really motivated myself and my co-author, Adam, to try and get the message out to people like yourself who are in a position to make change happen. Now, change won't happen without money. That is one extremely important thing. People are starting to realize this in Canada on the right. Preston Manning, in particular, who in his dotage from what was the Reform and Alliance and Conservative Party now, I guess, he's starting the Manning Center for the Promotion of Democracy, or Building Democracy, They're actually having a conference in Toronto in September. If any of you are interested in checking that out, they have a website to Building Democracy and Manning. Just Google that, you'd find it. And they're endowing this foundation with millions of dollars to give to groups, to start groups to fill gaps in what they call the conservative or liberal or libertarian or liberty-oriented infrastructure. So that in areas such as the environment where, I mean, where is there a really, I mean, there's a few environmental groups, but there are no activist groups out there organizing free market, promoting free market environmental solutions in a very major way. Fraser does some work on that, but it's not their main focus. Culture, the arts. Are there any free market groups promoting the arts? I can't think of one. We didn't come across any of this in our research. These are the kinds of things that they want to do. So what I want to tell you is, how can you tap into, in terms of making change happen, funding from groups like this or others, give you some ideas that you can take back to your community and campus to start promoting liberty and freedom in your own way. One thing about young people that we've discovered in our research as well is that they are more politically disengaged than anybody else, whether it's for reasons that they're just set up with the party system or because young people are more interactive. Our generation likes technology, and we're used to getting things fast. We're used to being in control. And so when you get into a hierarchical political party and people are all telling you what to do, you just go, not for me. So what we've seen is that while you've got 40% of Canadians who are under 30, only 5% of the members of political parties are under 30. And in the 2004 election, only 38% of voters were between the ages of 18 and 30. 61% of people over that age voted. So you've got an incredible disengagement, but this is also an incredible opportunity. One of the things that can be done is at the university level, in particular, in terms of establishing a conservative or a libertarian or a liberty-oriented presence on campus. One of the things I mentioned was environmental activism. When I was in university, there was virtually no environmental activism on the right. I mean, there was the Environmental Association of Students and the Law or something that was promoting the exact opposite, you know, big government intervention. But studies show that young people trust environmental groups more than any other in society. Politicians at the bottom of the list, incidentally. Environmental groups is 83%, politicians 38% trust them. So this is an opening for any of you who may be involved in the sciences or in environmental study to start a campus group to promote free market environmental ideas. Bring in speakers who can talk about these things. There are some groups in Canada that do this, but there are also many in the United States. The other thing that you can do is to bring in speakers on issues of free speech themselves. I mean, talk to Jerry Nichols, get him to come to your campus. There are people out there, there are resources who can talk about these issues. They just have to be invited to do this. The other group that young people trust the most next to environmental organizations are youth groups. So this is another opening. Activities like this, in fact, we are writing about this in the book because it is an exact example of how you can combine fun with activism and learning. And the key is to twin the two because young people have a limited amount of leisure time. In fact, less and less than previous generations of young people because we're working, studying, doing more at the same time. But they want to enjoy themselves, and this is the classic kind of thing to organize a tent in or organize a softball league around a liberty-oriented subject matter. You can have a speaker come to the dinner and talk about freedom issues, for example. The other thing to do is with regards to media. And I'm sure you heard a lot about media yesterday from Ezra, and I'm not sure who else spoke about it, but the media is biased, but there are ways to fight back. And in the States, for example, there they have an annual Liberty Film Festival. You know about this? In Hollywood, second annual this year is happening. They're having Libertarian Film Festival, and this is the kind of thing that is a creative way of reaching out to a younger audience through television, through film, to promote libertarian and conservative ideas. I've got enough Michael Moore movies up there. I'm screaming to see, you know, we have to start doing the opposite. So this is another thing. Have a libertarian festival on your campus, for example, with libertarian films. The other issue is the curriculum on campus, too. I mean, Canada spends $19 billion a year on post-secondary education. Are we really getting value for that? hard to tell. Some of the courses, you really have to wonder. I mean, we've got a laundry list in our book of them, but you start with things like women's studies and gender studies. And, you know, at the law school I went to at McGill, something like 30% of the elective courses are on special interest law. It's like anti-poverty law or women's law or you name it. You have to wonder what you're getting in terms of how are you going to use this degree when you get out in society. And not only that, but the message it sends is that these are the important issues of the day. Where are the classes on the opposite side of the spectrum? Where is the promotion of ideas of liberty, freedom, and Western thought? They aren't there. So there's that gap to fill. So run for student council. Get control of your student councils, and try and promote or push a curriculum to the university brass that is more liberty-oriented. Try and fight for that. Start campus newspapers, too. That's a very effective thing. Of course, that needs money, and that's where things like the Manning Foundation and others come in, sources that you can go to actually try and say, hey, I have an idea to promote freedom. Please give me some seed money, and let me try and make it happen. And hopefully there will be more organizations. There's one called the Society for Academic Freedom and Scholarship that exists, SAF. Are you on the board of that? Yes?
I'm not a member.
Okay. And they do exist. So they are a resource in terms of information. They have a website, staffs.ca, that you can go to get information how they promote freedom on campus and that kind of thing. But they're just one. I mean, you go to the United States and you've got so many. It's really a shame. I mean, we should be having our proportionate share. And if you think of the $1 billion that was spent, if Canada had spent $100 million, on a conservative infrastructure, just 10% of that, and you think how far ahead we would be. So that's the message I want to leave you with, is that it's a bleak picture, but it's not hopeless. It can be changed. And I know I wouldn't be working on this project if I didn't believe it could be changed, and I think all of you can take the information you've had this weekend forward and make things happen where you live and start changing our culture, because that's the only way that we're going to change the political system in the end. Thank you. Or ideas for the book, please. Yeah.
I just want to register a general complaint about the tendency to use conservative and libertarian as if they were more or less synonyms.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. And it's very important that when your kind of message is getting out to the public, the pundits, part of that public, their image of conservatism, or right wing as they call it, is always going to identify us with the Nazis. I mean, that's their model. Now, I mean, I think that they're Nazis myself, the leftists are. But nevertheless, the leftists and the rightists are both on the wrong side of the tracks. I mean, libertarianism is not to be thought of as right-wing in the sense in which the left-wingers are left-wing. We're not on that axis. We're up there because we're in favor of freedom mm-hmm. of both economic and civil kinds.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I think it's just not a good idea to use the word conservative as if it was the name of the same kind of good thing that libertarian is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a point well taken, and there's a great deal of confusion in terms of the media, what conservatives, usually they think of conservatives with a big C.
The confusion is, I assure you, completely deliberate. People are tearing down libertarian ideas by identifying them with something completely different. Quite rightly, has a bad image in the public mind.
No, and that's something that we are very clear in the book. We are anti-statists. But you want to be for something, too. You don't want to just be against statism, because that paints you as a negative light, and that's, in fact, one of the problems, sort of that, I'd say, the freedom-oriented movement is. It's always saying, we want less. We want less regulation. We want less. We're always against something. You have to be for something at the same time. So that is a point, though, that we are keeping in mind in terms of also reaching an audience, because we don't want to turn people off by saying we're small-c conservatives when our definition of that is basically smaller government and less intervention.
Hi, I'm Jamie Tronis. I'm down here.
Hi.
I don't have a lot of slack on this thing. Just a quick comment. This year I did send an application for grant money for the Liberty Summer Seminar to the Manning Foundation.
Oh, did you?
I have not heard back yet.
They haven't. Okay. They haven't started giving out money yet, which is possibly why.
Good. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, no,
if anyone wants to write them a few letters of support, we'd appreciate it.
They are starting up their efforts this September. The conference in Toronto, that is the first thing that they are doing to our knowledge, so I wouldn't feel bad that this is exactly the kind of thing that they would support from talking to Mr. Manning of what he wants to do.
The second thing that I'm in charge of the Conservative Party's internship program, and one of the things that we had done recently in sort of response to one of these realizations, I know Mr. Harper definitely shares some of these concerns, we upped the enrollment from the internship program from 8 people to 34 people under Mr. Harper's leadership, because there's been sort of a commitment with our own internal funds to hire more youth. How do you think that external think tanks, I know the Fraser Institute has a fantastic internship program, do you think that having more opportunities for youth to get involved in the research and writing side of Liberty, such as with the Western Standard, for example,
mm-hmm.
Can really assist? Do you think that that's something that that you would consider a very core element of changing the future for Canada in a more liberty-oriented way?
Absolutely. It's not only within those organizations, but volunteerism generally. Young people do volunteer. There's a myth that young people don't volunteer. They actually do. But the way they like to volunteer is to find a place where they can learn skills and use skills. So exactly the kind of things you're talking about would be key in attracting young people to liberty-oriented think tanks or groups, is give them something where they will have develop a marketable skill out of. So if you're doing research on a project, or you know, if you're researching, for example, I think a free market environmental nonprofit, for example, even starting up a website or working on the technological aspect, that's very attractive to young people, and it's something that I think is very key in developing that culture, is to bring people into these organizations. So yeah, the Fraser should, you know, Fraser does have a lot of interns. I don't know how many, Mark, but
we probably do about a dozen a year.
Yeah.
But I think we should go, and a lot of them are in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to have all seasons.
Yeah, I thought that would be a great idea. No, I you're absolutely right, because that is the kind of thing that you need to build that interest at a younger level.
Hey, Georgia. I was interested in your remarks about how the Americans are always seem to be ahead of us on certain liberty-oriented things. There's another whole stream of thought that I wasn't aware of myself until very recently, but Pierre Lemieux actually organized a Liberty Fund colloquium a couple of months ago, and there were several of us here. Jerry Nichols was there, and Ezra was there, and I was there, and it was called something like the Classical Liberal Foundations of Canada. And when I first was invited to this, I thought, like, what Classical Liberal Foundations of Canada? But as I got the readings and started reading through this stuff, there was some actually quite amazing aspects of Canadian history that I think a lot of us are unaware of. And in particular, that the U.S. was for decades and decades ahead of us in adopting socialist ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, the New Deal came into the U.S. long before we had a lot of the New Deal ideas in Canada.
Yeah,
and one of the best sources of material about this is a book by economist William Watson. I forget the name of it.
Globalization. The Meaning of Canadian Life.
That's it. Yes, and that's an amazing book. And if we could sort of start changing, I mean, I know that when I read it, it really opened my eyes to how much classical liberalism there is in Canadian history. Canadians today don't think of ourselves as having that classical liberal history, but I think if we could somehow get that idea out more and sort of make people sort of take pride in the classical liberal and freedom traditions that we actually do have in our history, and even realize that they're there, that could be a really great tool for changing people's idea of what it means to be Canadian.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And the Montreal Economic Institute, I heard a speech by Michelle Kelly-Daniel exactly along those lines not long ago, probably quoting stuff from Bill Watson's book, because I know we're using it as well in our research. And there are many aspects. Income tax was first brought in the United States. The United States had a national bank before we did. Gas taxes brought in before, pensions. All these programs that we say are, you know, define Canada, the great statist, program-loving country that we are, in fact, we adopted them from U.S. models. So when people say you're being, you're being pro-American or anti-Canadian when you say, well, we should have two tracks of health care, you say, well, actually, no, you know, or we should cut back social programs because they have them first. It's something that people don't really know about. But, yes, that's an excellent book for anyone to read, Globalization and the Meaning of Canadian Life. William Watson from McGill. Yeah. I think he won the Donner Prize for it, or was nominated for the Donner Prize a few years ago. Yeah. Yes.
There's a huge liberty-oriented section in America, but it doesn't really seem to have impacted Republican Party, which is
The party that they'd most likely be trying to hit, the party on the right, or any political party in the States other than, you say, the Libertarian Party, which is pretty fringe, just those fringes it is here. How would you, he's not here right now, is he?
I missed that.
I guess the question is, if we manage to kind of develop the type of infrastructure that they have in the States, are we going to be able to have an actual impact on the political process, or is it going to be as disconnected from the ideas as it seems to be right now in the States?
I assume you're referring to the fact that there's a lot more social conservatism in the United States.
Social conservatism, a big spending conservatism. I mean, take the social out of it. I mean, there's talk about privatizing social security. There's talk about a lot of things, but there really doesn't seem to be a whole lot of real belief in that free markets and real belief in limited government. There really seems to be pure political opportunism at every level there.
I don't know if one of the reasons obviously is that they're since 9/11 have been at war. I don't think that anyone foresaw that. I don't know if Bush's agenda would have been the same in terms of government spending if they hadn't gone.
I mean, you can drop all military spending completely out of the picture. I mean, just look at the bill that was passed recently with the $400 million for the bridges and for two in the lab. That's a one big example of something that's entirely throughout the system. I mean, they're just spending at every single level. I mean, the education programs that the federal government's been putting through, and they're really, really against federal government involved in education until they're the federal government, and then suddenly they became really excited and implementing these policies. And that seems to me that they adopted a lot of the free market rhetoric and then completely rejected all the actual policies when they got into power. And I just wonder if, despite the infrastructure, if there's any way to actually use that to make sure that these ideas get across. Because right now it doesn't seem to have been that effective in the States.
Yeah, I would say on balance they're doing a better job than we are. I agree with you that there obviously are a lot of big government ideas in the U.S. In Canada, we have corporate welfare is one of the big things that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation fights against. You've got that in the States too, state subsidies for agriculture and all sorts of other things. However, the reality is they are still ahead of the curve in terms of talking about the kinds of concepts. They've got media outlets, they've got more think tanks, they've got a culture that's much stronger. I mean, like you say, the libertarianism in Canada is very, it's almost like equated with NASA, but it's seen as a fringe thing. It's not as in the States it's more, I would say, in the mainstream. You can talk about liberty and freedom, people won't look at you and start wondering, yeah, exactly. I was going to say something else. You've been smoking, but okay. exactly. right. Unfortunately, Mr. Every is not here, but it's true. I take your point. I still think that it will make a difference in this country. What I was going to say at the beginning with social conservatism is that in the U.S., the conservative movement has, Republican movement has been taken over more or less in terms of agenda-wise on many issues by the social conservatives and the religious right. We don't have that element in Canada in terms of a strong religious presence. We do in certain provinces and certain places, but overall, the impact of religion and the religiosity of our country is so much less than the United States in terms of how many people go to church here and how many people count religion as important in their daily lives, and young people even less than older generations. I don't know if I have the stats here on how many young people actually go to church. Yeah, only 5% of 15 to 24-year-olds attend a place of worship compared to 30% of older Canadians, and that's a lot less than the U.S., too, in terms of that. So those elements are missing, and those elements in terms of freedom issues for what you'd be talking about and less government intervention wouldn't be as much of a factor in Canada because you wouldn't have the desire to legislate morality to the extent that you would have, I would say, in the United States.
Unfortunately, Canada speaks to get in trouble. But if we're supposed to be, if we're against bigger government, against, you know, what are we supposed to be in favor of?
Good point.
And I put that out to them.
That goes
fast for all the trouble.
Same way.
Jen,
obviously, we're in favor of individual freedom. That's something to be in favor of. It's very positive. I don't know why you have to think about it as negative. The only thing negative about it is that there are so many obstacles to it that keep removing. But once you do, what you've got is people living their lives. That's what we want, isn't it?
But that's, when you put it that way, that's exactly the positive message you have to put out. Because, it, like I said earlier, we're always seen to be against things. You're against programs. You're against. You want to cut. You want to curtail the state. And you have to send out the message that it is a positive, like you said. It's an empowering thing. You want to empower individuals to make choices, like Mark was talking about. Choice is one of the buzzwords I know that the Texas Federation also uses, especially on the healthcare debate. You deserve choice. It's your choice. Yes?
I just wanted to provide an unsolicited response to that as well. I think that we're also for removing the barriers to innovation. I've got my pet issue that I talk about all the time, but an example of that is hearing people with orphan disease right now that aren't necessarily politically visible, that's something that I'm for, and that's mm-hmm. something that isn't often looked at. When we look at healthcare, we look at the delivery of healthcare to people who we can't help already, but what about those who we can't help because of the lack of knowledge and the lack of innovation that's simply a result of kind of twisted funding structures that focus on certain issues and diseases over others.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I just wanted to point something out. I don't know if you maybe glazed over it because it's too obvious, but you mentioned free market think tanks on environmental issues, free market environmentalism, and PERC?
PERC?
Property Environment Research Center?
Does
that ring a bell?
No, it does not.
Okay, you should go home tonight and www.perc.com. Greatest niche site on the web. And then there's Environment Probe in Canada.
Yeah, Environment Probe, we do now.
Okay.
Just
to let you know. Cause
yeah, PERC, no, I had not.
And Terry Anderson. Yeah, okay, but even still, I mean, Terry Anderson.
I'm talking about Canadian ones.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, it's, and that's good to know because I actually haven't written the environment policy chapter of the book yet. So I will look at PERC. But, that's this week. But in Canada, Energy Probe and Environment Probe you mentioned are the only ones that we know of. And there's no activist. There's no one who's in your face like a Greenpeace kind of thing on the other side, you know, counter-protesting at steel hunts or whatever. We don't have that here.
There's Tufts Unlimited, the National Conservation Company, NCC.
I don't know, does Tufts Unlimited promote a free market conservation, free market environmentalism? Or?
They buy properties to protect what free markets promote.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's...
They're not active.
They're not active, exactly. I mean... Okay, that's scary. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Okay. That's it, then. I thank you very much, and have a good night.